Hi, and welcome to another episode of God's Unfolding Promise to Renew the Whole Universe, Grace Lutheran Church's official podcast for its confirmation class. This week's reading in chapter 13 from Manna and Mercy is one of the longer chapters, and it covers a lot of territory. I mean, we start off kind of at the end of the Gospel of Luke, and by the end of the chapter, we are into Paul's letters and halfway through or a little further into the book of Acts. But one of the things that it does talk about quite a bit besides the church, and we'll talk more about that in class, but it also we're also at the point of resurrection. And so I kind of wanted to begin by saying, what is it, when somebody talks about resurrection, what is it that you think of? I know throughout much of our society, when we talk about kind of life after death, it is often in terms of heaven. The idea essentially being that kind of our soul floats off after we die and off into the heavens to spend eternity with God and all of our relatives, loved ones, family and friends. It is sort of a wonderful image that I think is meant to bring a little bit of comfort that we aren't sort of lost or disconnected from those who have preceded us in death, so that life continues on. But there is a problem with that particular understanding of the afterlife. That's not an afterlife that is really talked about much, and in fact the Bible doesn't talk a whole lot about what life after death looks like, but where it does, it is very clear that it is not about sort of a disembodied soul floating up into the heavens. It is much more about this idea of resurrection. And how does resurrection differ from what we normally think of in terms of in terms of heaven? Well, first of all, resurrection involves a body. And the Gospels are very clear about this. The only one that doesn't really have a physical appearance of Jesus would be the Gospel of Mark. But the others, especially the Gospel of Luke, which Erlander relies upon, I think, to kind of form the basis of his story of Jesus in Manna and Mercy, has two sort of episodes where Jesus appears. The first one is on the road to Emmaus, and where Jesus joins a couple of the disciples as they journey towards the town of Emmaus, leaving Jerusalem, from Jerusalem. They don't recognize him while he is walking with them, but then he sits down and has a meal with them. And at that point, they recognize that it was Jesus. And then Luke is a little ambiguous here, but essentially the sense is that, poof, Jesus was gone, as soon as they kind of recognize him. Later that day, Jesus appears among the 12. And there again, he basically says, here's my body. I think he shows them the wounds in his hands, sort of thing. He asks for some fish to eat and for something to drink. Again, there's that close connection with the body. In the Gospel of John, we have the same thing where Jesus appears first to 10 of the disciples. Remember, Judas would be gone by this time. And Thomas comes a little too late to see Jesus, and Jesus appears again the following week. This time, Thomas is there and gets to see, and actually is told to put his, to touch Jesus' wounds. Mary, upon seeing Jesus immediately from the tomb, grabs hold or tries to hug, or hugs Jesus. But Jesus says, okay, stop hugging me. You can't cling to me forever. I need to kind of move on. But again, this is a body that is being, that has been resurrected. And it's a body that it's more than just sort of a sense of resuscitation. It's not just, oh, I've been brought back to life. As we probably have seen on various TV shows, when somebody maybe had an accident, falls in a pool, they do CPR, and then the next thing you know, there's a deep breath and the person's life goes on. That's not, in fact, what we're talking about here, because as I mentioned, in that story of Luke on the road to Emmaus, Jesus disappears. The story in John's Gospel of Jesus appearing to the 10 and then the following week with Thomas, so the 11, the door is, John mentions very clearly that the door is locked. There's no way that people could get in because they were afraid of the society around them. And yet, all of a sudden, there's Jesus in the middle of that. When Mary in John's gospel comes to the tomb, she lingers after they find the tomb empty, and she turns to the gardener and says, "Please, sir, tell me where they have put my Lord." At which point the gardener says, "Mary." And at that point, when Jesus calls Mary by name, she recognizes that it is Jesus. So there is something different about this body of Jesus, but there's also some continuity with it. It's a physical body, capable of eating, drinking, that sort of walking. At the same time, and it carries the wounds of what had happened to Jesus in the past. So it is essentially, the idea, I think, in that imagery is that it is sort of a stamp of, I think as Erlander puts it, God's cry of yes to Jesus' life of mercy and how Jesus lived. Basically an affirmation of the way of Jesus, even to the point of the cross, even all the way to the cross. And yet, at the same time, it's something different. Paul talks about resurrection. He has an entire chapter in his first letter of Corinthians, chapter 15, where he, again, talks about resurrection. This is one of the, I think, most concise places. This is where a lot of our information comes from, or our thoughts about. And here, again, he is very clear that it is a bodily resurrection, as opposed to sort of a disembodied soul that just sort of goes up into the heavens. And so I guess the way to sort of think about this is what we normally think of in terms of heaven is not really what the Christian hope is all about. Christian hope, the thing that we sort of acknowledge on Sunday mornings, is the idea of resurrection. And I think it's important to kind of keep that distinction, because resurrection is less about escaping this world and more about kind of a recreation or renewal of this world. Think of it as removing the things in this life that are not right. Things such as racism, sexism, the things that kind of keep people divided and separated, the things that allow some of us to see others as being less than us. All of those kinds of things that lead to poverty, inequality, those are the things that are being removed. And what resurrection is affirming is life, not just in the present, but also in the goodness of God's creation. Yes, there is a lot of things that are not right, that are not correct, that are not just. That is a reality of the life in which we live. But we as Christians look forward to the time when all of the universe will be renewed. That's the unfolding promise. That promise is what then sort of guides us as Christians, I think both individually, but even more importantly, as the community. And that is essentially what we see here and get into a little bit more in depth in this 13th chapter of Manna and Mercy, where now the church becomes a contrast society. And I'm always a little leery of using words like that. I think there's a lot of truth in them, but at the same time, it's not a complete rejection of the things that we have learned in society. I think sometimes people take it as a rejection of anything that is scientific, especially if it disagrees with their sort of ideological position. It means, I think people have taken it to mean, you can't have fun. There are some churches out there that say that dancing is not good, or that everybody needs to wear long pants or long skirts, that any skin exposed kind of above the ankle, so shorts would be out, for example, is somehow sinful. That's not what this means at all. A contrast society in that what guides us is the way of Jesus Christ, the way that essentially led to the cross. It is a way of humbleness. It is a way of sort of, I think, deep respect for life, not just of human beings, but of all of God's kind of creation. It is a life that is propelled and looks forward to a time of justice, mercy, wholeness, when everybody has what they need to enjoy and to have life in the fullest, and that is which is that promise of resurrection, and it is that vision, even as we realize we're never going to fully get there, that kind of guides our life together as a community, as a church, and as individuals. We'll have much more to talk about it in class, and I hope to see you there. Have a good week, everyone.